This is Will's Band of the Week for November 3rd, 2019. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Anurag from the Ontario Bureau.
Hello, everyone.
Anurag has just, you said you had a meeting, but I'm going to infer that you just gave a presentation to 1,000 shareholders of the corporation.
And only if it were true.
The pressure
no,
were,
it's
was
not.
On. It wasn't that?
No. So I work for a bank. I won't reveal on the podcast which bank. And this bank is a multinational bank. And like all banks in Canada, they're moving all the jobs back to China, Vietnam, Malaysia, India. So my meetings are in really odd hours. Sometimes they're at 5 in the morning, like it was this morning. And sometimes they're at 10 at 9:30 at night, right? Like right now. I just finished a meeting. In fact, it was 1,000 shareholders. It was just two people.
Wow, that's no fun. And,
yep, we just compared notes. We said, yep, everything's good. All right, goodbye. I got to get to my scintillating music and best whiskey ever. Are we going to compare whiskeys?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But so you tell the person in the international meeting, you tell them, I've got some podcasting to do. We're going to have to wrap this up, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I told them it's late at night for me. I got to go home. I got to go to sleep.
Okay, yeah.
Not revealing to them that the party's just started.
Secretly, right, yeah. That's good. So, yeah, our schedule is a little weird. So hopefully there's not going to be like a death of the week that we miss or something. But we're recording this one a few days early because of scheduling reasons. So, all right, yeah. So we were going to do the whiskey challenge, and I basically threw down the gauntlet and said, whatever whiskey you have is not as good as mine.
No. What are you drinking?
Mine is it's an Ardbeg whiskey called An Oa.
An Oa.
Yeah,
nope.
It's A-N and then a separate word, O-A. Not sure what that means, but it means good whiskey, I believe.
Oh, was it on the discount aisle?
Excellent. No. I'd call it a mid-priced. It isn't cheap, okay. But it's not super expensive either. Oh, man, delicious.
Where is it from?
Ardbeg is from Islay in Scotland. We visited the distillery summers ago.
Okay, I take it back. I bet you it's really good.
That's a great tour, by the way. If you go to Scotland, to Islay, go to Ardbeg.
Okay.
I think Ardbeg and Laphroaig are, you know, both two of my favorite whiskeys and two of my favorite whiskey tours. So,
Laphroaig, I find it very, what's the word? I don't want to say smoky. I'm going to say pungent.
Oh, it is. It is smoky. It's they call it peaty, but it is smoky. And
I like smoky whiskeys. Like my favorite is Lavagulin.
Right, right. So we did that tour too.
Ardbeg
is in that same category. So maybe you'd like this one.
Okay, yeah. I take it back. I think your whiskey's better.
So what have you? You probably have your Canadian, so you probably have Crown Royal, right?
No, I don't.
No?
No, I'm drinking Oban. It's also from Scotland.
That is good. That is a good one. Yeah. Is it the 14?
14, yeah.
Yeah, ooh, that's good. I went there, too.
Oh, my God. How drunk were you in Scotland, man?
We were on this tour, and Oban was a place where we stopped that had this harbor and fantastic seafood, and we weren't doing the tour, but they said you can just stop in there, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to quickly. So it was kind of a quick stop, but it was great. Yeah.
So it's pronounced Oban?
I believe they call it Oban. Yeah. Some of these Scottish terms are not they're not the way that we might, you know, North Americans might pronounce them. So
Because even at the duty free, I just buy, because you know how, I don't know if you know that booze here in Ontario is taxed like really, really high, especially this distilled alcohol. So your gins and your whiskeys and your scotches. So we tend to buy everything from duty free.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so in duty free, they always pronounce it Oban. I know that because I asked somebody, is this the correct pronunciation? And they said, yeah, it's Oban. Oh, okay. Oh, well, you're right.
Well, I think I'm right. You'll have to, you should probably go
well, you
to
were
the,
there,
dis-
so
I would say,
probably
yeah,
know.
I would say you should go to the distillery, though, to verify it. That's I'd recommend doing that. So,
all right.
Yeah, some of these towns are just really cool. They have these little harbors that are really picturesque and little, little main streets and stuff. And yeah, it's probably a community of, it's kind of touristy. If you were to guess how many people lived there, maybe a couple thousand people. It's not big at all.
Okay.
All these places where they make the whiskeys are tiny little places. It's pretty fascinating. Oh yeah. So speaking of I've been to these duty-free shops, and they're never less expensive than I can get Scotch whiskey here in the United States.
Yeah, I've noticed that, yes.
But they are now apparently, another reason to not like Donald Trump, apparently he's imposed, we're going to blame him, I guess, U.S. government or whatever, has imposed a tariff that is supposed to increase the prices of Scotch whiskey by something like 25%.
Oh, no.
So as soon as I learned that, I went and bought like 5 bottles of whiskey.
I was going to say, so you'll have to go to the duty-free now, huh?
Yeah, well, I might end up having to do that, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
All right.
But it still won't beat the taxes that we have to pay on. Like, for example, so let's say if you're going to buy your Glenlivet, right?
Mm-hmm.
In duty-free, it's going to cost me $35 US in LCBO, the Liquor Control Board of Ontario shops here in Ontario, it would cost me, I think, around $45 to $50 US. So almost like $10-$15 more for a bottle.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It's tax. Oh, well, it pays for roads and hospitals and bridges and whatnot.
Yeah. That's how you have to think of it.
Yes, exactly.
You get the whiskey and you also contribute to your community.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, every country, I'm sure, has different methods of taxing people.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the United States, property taxes are in some communities are huge. And some states,
yes.
Some states have sales taxes and some don't. Wisconsin is kind of in the middle, I think, on that. We're really high on property taxes. So just like for owning a house, you have to pay lots of money that's the way they get money. So, for example,
for your house, what's the property tax?
My property tax is about $10,000 US per year.
So, I mean, percentage-wise, what would that be?
Oh, I don't know. I can't do the math. That's too complicated for me.
Okay. All right. I pay 6% property
6%.
Tax. So that comes out to be about 6,000 Canadian. And it varies. It increases, and the property value increases by like about 10,000 every year or so. So yeah.
Mm. Well, it's variable too, because where we live, the schools assess a property tax, and the county does, and so there are a whole bunch of different entities that are adding on. We should have Chris on here, the policy analyst. He'd have this more, be able to say this more accurately than me. He probably knows where all of his dollars go, and I don't really know where mine go. I just know they take.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
yeah. I at the end of the day, I don't really care.
Yeah,
just don't bother me. Here's a check. Just take it.
Right, take it. Yeah. All right. Well. Yeah. Cool. I'm glad I got a hold of you because we kind of came close to having another one of those scary, just me babble podcasts. I would have kept it short, though. I would have kept it short. I wouldn't babble for a long time. So
I enjoy those. I don't know about everybody else, but I enjoy those. I keep waiting for it. Just hit this slight pause where you're struggling to figure out what the hell should I say next. You can just figure out.
Yeah, but I usually
just
have
at the edge of just stopping the podcast right there.
When I record them, you know, I'll have like a 15-second pause. I can just sit here, you know. And then in the editing process, I just chop that out. So,
yeah. Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's miracles of editing.
Cool.
So, yeah. So, basically, I threw it to you, and I said, what are you listening to? And you gave me a list of, it was a good list, six or seven things.
I did.
So, I narrowed down your list, and so we've basically got like a superstar lineup of indie rock veterans, right?
I noticed you just skipped over my Cult of Luna album.
I was like perusing through and I'm like, it said like Swedish metal or something. I'm like,
it is.
And then it had a screaming guy that like Chris describes as Cookie Monster rock. And I thought, well, I'm not sure.
I would have loved to discuss that, but okay, that's okay.
Okay, Cult of Luna. If you want some metal, you can just give a general recommendation, right?
Yes, it's called sludge metal. Please,
sludge metal. Wow, that's a pretty good phrase.
Yes, I love it. And in case, yes. So you chose possibly three, and they're really good records. Yes.
Yeah, we can do all three. We'll zip through them. We don't have to belabor it too much, but cool. This is solid stuff. So, do you have a preferred order, or do you want me to decide?
Just decide, man. Your podcast, your rules.
All right, I do make the rules. Let's start with Michael Cronin.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so we've talked about him before. I saw him live a couple of years ago.
Oh, are you kidding?
Came through town. Played in Madison, and I think he's from Los Angeles, and I think what kind of got him, you know, in the conversation, so to speak, is that he plays in Ty Siegel's band, right? He's the bass player in Ty Siegel's, well, at least one of Ty Siegel's bands.
I don't know about that. I know he and Ty Siegel released an album called Reverse Shark Attack. I'm going to say 2008, 2009.
Oh, really?
It
that
was
long ago?
One of the best albums I've heard that year. It was so good.
So you're talking 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah. It was a really long time ago.
Okay.
And then he released a couple of, I think he released one more album after that, and then he just went silent until I heard his album on the NPR, our competitors, NPR podcast, and I was actually quite surprised. I was like, holy cow, he's back in this scene. And listened to the album. It was really good. Yeah.
So this is his fourth album under just his own name.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yep. And it's called Seeker. And, well, you nominated it. So why don't you take the first pick?
All right. Let's listen to Feel It All.
Gone a long time. I know better now than then. We fill the void with something ugly. Better off dead. I feel it all sitting on a road. It's gone. Ready to go. Thank you.
And then it just keeps on building and building and building. And oh, excellent song.
Yeah. So I put this on and just with no expectations. Mm-hmm. And it just flows really well, doesn't it? And it has a good, it's, I don't know, it just seems really, really kind of natural. Like he's not trying too hard. It's just good, natural songwriting, and the instrumentation's good, the recording's good, and it's all,
He's cut back a lot on the feedback that he used to have. I mean, that's how I'm picturing his previous album, MCIII. I think it stands for Roman numerals 1103. And that's, I remember a lot of, I don't remember, recall it. That was like a little while ago, I think 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember, recall a lot of feedback. And I don't hear that at all in this album.
Right. But, there's not a lot of fireworks. Yeah.
What I like is it's like starts off as a simple rock and roll song. And then somewhere in the midway point, it just kind of delves into this different sounds suddenly coming out from, like, he had horns in this album, in this song. Feel it all. Like, crazy, right? Horns in a rock song.
Yeah. That's good.
Yep.
Yeah, you know what I was saying? You know, I saw him live, and I forgot to have you give the update on the live scene in Kitchener.
Oh, really? You want to hear my live scene?
Yeah.
My wife's birthday is tomorrow, and one of her neighbor's birthday was on 27th. So they decided to take us all to a cover band for Beatles. That's what I saw.
You did that already, or are you doing that for her birthday?
We already did it last Friday.
A Beatles cover band.
Oh, my God. Yeah, halfway through, we were like, okay, I think we can leave now.
Oh, so it wasn't that enthralling, huh?
It was okay. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was way too long. It went on for almost like 3 hours.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Yeah.
It's overstaying your welcome.
Yes, it was a little too long. That's my live report. What about you?
Well, didn't you say that that Waterloo has like an arena where they're getting some bigger acts?
They are, but they are those acts that I really don't want to see, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Those pop stars. I mean.
Right. You know, you take your daughter, though, right?
You know what, Will? My daughter is coming around now. She's listening to more and more the type of music that you and I listen to.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. Like, she's really into Always right now. Like,
excellent.
Bumping it good. Day and night from her. I just keep hearing it from her room. Yeah.
So, well, then she's got to be, she's got to like Basement Revolver too, then, right?
I don't try and push my stuff on her because, you know.
You're just going to let her figure it out, right?
Exactly. You know your kids. You try and tell them to do something.
You'll be taking a trip to Hamilton to see Basement Revolver at some
point.
I'm
just waiting for her to turn 19.
Just waiting for her to ask,
And to ask. Too. Yeah, that's cool. That's right. That's right.
That's good. All right. Okay, the song you picked was one of my top three. So let's see. I have one that's kind of a mid-tempo and one that's kind of a rocker. Yeah, I'm going to... I think I like... this one's more of the mid-tempo, but I really like it a lot. It's the next one, number four, called Fire.
For miles.
Michael Cronin.
This one also builds up, right?
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. So if a friend asked you, and you're telling them, this you should listen to this Michael Cronin album. It's really good. And if they said, what does it sound like? Or what kind of music is it? What would you say?
Oh, my God.
Because I was just thinking, I don't know what I would say. I would just say, well, it's kind of a guitar rock album.
Yeah,
what else are you going to say, right?
It's a rock album.
It's not really punk rock. It's not psychedelic. Nope. It's not, I don't know.
Not even like country rock or anything, right?
No, it's
rock and roll.
I guess it could be sort of maybe a little bit 70s rock influenced, but it doesn't sound dated, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
So, solid. Well, we can play one more.
Yeah, go ahead. You pick. You said you had three picks. What was the other one?
I did have another one I could pick. There's a rockin' one. Well, there's probably more than one rockin' one, but one that where you kind of like, you be the judge. Number six. It's number six.
Oh, okay.
I've Got Reason. Pretty good, right?
It is. I like it.
Yeah, it's got that fuzz guitar. And then I'm going to say, we need Barrett here, but I'm going to say that's a Beatlesque melody. And I think it might be Dear Prudence.
Oh, wow.
Does that sound right?
Holy cow, you're right on the button.
That's what I'm thinking. I have to find out if Barrett approves of my comparison. But cool. I just think it has a cool combination of sounds in there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You've gotten me reinterested in Michael Cronin.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, it came out, I don't know when, like 3 weeks ago or whatever. Like a whole bunch of stuff came out at the same time. And I'm like, what am I going to devote myself to? And then I wasn't sure if I was going to put in the time. And then you assigned this to me, and I'm glad you did. So
yeah, you can blame that NPR podcast.
I can't believe you're admitting that you're influenced by NPR. I mean, that's just, I'm not sure if you should be admitting that, but
I'll be honest, I do listen to it every now and then, but I've been a little disappointed in their selections off late, and they're just I don't know.
Well, our criticism is always that they feel like they have to like everything,
Yeah.
And on one hand, I can kind of understand that because I was actually thinking about this recently. Mm-hmm. Very, very early on in the podcast, I think we learned a very good lesson. I'm going to compliment Chris right now. because Chris kept making the point of there's no point in talking about music that you don't like.
That's
you know, and there's no reason to really like review something to say you don't like it. Just talk about stuff that you do like. And that's become the way, you know, it was different back in, you know, when we were younger and there was no internet and everything, right? You're being force-fed music by the radio and by the record labels. And now those are your only choices. So in that context, okay, they've force-fed you, you know, a Led Zeppelin album or whatever. If you don't like it, yeah, do a review that says, this is bad, you know?
Correct.
And I think that's fine. But in today's world, you can listen to anything you want, right? There's no reason. I don't have to tell somebody that they shouldn't listen to the Kanye West album or something. Like, I guess that's sort of an exception because he's so famous that anything he puts out is going to get listened to by millions of people. And so I guess it's legitimate in that context for people to say, okay, this isn't good. But that's the exception. For all the stuff that we listen to, it's like, okay, we're only... There's nothing that we're going to feature on this podcast that we don't have.
Like.
At least somebody doesn't. I mean, we'll have a debate sometimes, a fun debate. But yeah, we're putting it on because at least somebody thinks it's really good. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's a good attitude to have.
Michael Cronin. We are, both of us are pro Michael Cronin.
Correct.
The new album is called Seeker. And I think I like him better than Ty Siegel. I like Ty Siegel in like... small doses, and to me, he's kind of hit and miss. I know. I think you're kind of more of a fan.
I'm a huge fan, so be careful with your words.
And there, you're not the only one. One or two other of the of our podcast cohorts, I think, are big Ty Siegel fans. So I'm a mild Ty Siegel fan, but I think that Michael Cronin, to me, has more tunefulness to his songwriting that attracts me a little bit more. So, not that you have to have tunes, you know, you can just be noise and that's fine too. Speaking of which, we're going to talk about the Kim Gordon album. Yeah, okay. So, Kim Gordon, indie rock veteran. Like, this is an indie, if there ever was an indie rock veteran, Kim Gordon is an indie rock veteran, right?
She's what, 65?
She's 66.
66.
She was born in 1953. And, of course, with Sonic Youth, I did extensive music journalism today to determine that there were 16 Sonic Youth studio albums. And I'm sure she was on every one of them because there was never, you know, that's a really, isn't that a cool thing about Sonic Youth? There was never a personnel change. I bet somebody's going to fact check me on this, but I bet for all 16 albums, it's the exact same four people. Right,
it was. Drummer might have had a change.
Steve Shelley.
Don't quote me on that, but I don't know why. I think they.
Okay, Nicholas can tell us, right?
Okay.
If Steve Shelley's not on all of them, he's got to be on most of them, right?
Exactly. I think when they went mainstream, that's when he came into the picture. I don't know. It just kind of is in my mind that.
All right, we'll have to do more extensive digging into this one. But anyway, legendary indie rock band. Of course, Kim Gordon and Thurston Moore were married for a long time, and then
really long time.
And then they got, I think they got divorced right around like when Sonic Youth broke up. Then. Yeah, so it's like, okay, we're done. So then Thurston Moore has put out all kinds of solo stuff. Kim Gordon had this band called Body Head. Did you ever listen to any of that stuff?
Yes, I listened to the first one quite a bit. And I'll be honest, I would listen to a couple of songs and then I had to clean my palate by listening to Neil Diamond or Michael Jackson or something like that.
I thought maybe you'd listen to the sludge metal.
No, that's only when I need to clean my palate of Michael Jackson and Neil Diamond.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Wow, you have a good, that's good.
Yeah.
I kind of think, okay, so this is the first ever solo, so to speak, you know, album.
Yes.
Of Kim Gordon just under her own name.
It is.
Yep. And I guess she has some collaborators. But and it's called No Home Record. And I have to say, I listened to this and I thought, you know, it's pretty experimental, and that's, I guess, what you'd expect from her. But I had kind of a hard time latching onto it, so I kind of more appreciated it for just being kind of cool than I did, like, really, like, dive into it. So how did you feel like you could, did you feel like you could sort of absorb it?
Third listen, I was totally hooked onto it. It took me a little while, and my general rule is that if I don't like it the first time, then that's it. I'm done. But I thought, hey, this is Kim Gordon, right? Let's give her her due. And I'm glad I persevered, because I really like this album a lot, and it's just going to be definitely going to be in the top 10 somewhere.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, I have a couple of picks that I could make, but you need to definitely make the first one.
All right, let's listen to Murdered Out, number 4. Before everybody starts to pour water on all on this, you have to understand why I like this record. I don't know if everybody's heard the albums by Body Heat. Those were experimental albums. You couldn't, like I said, you could not go through two songs before you had to stop and just listen to something else. You had to.
Yeah.
So by contrast, this is pop music. So I really like this. It's what Sonic Youth used to be, you know, just hard hitting, silly, stupid lyrics that makes absolutely no sense. But gosh, the music, and I don't think she has a voice that, you know, is a really sing song voice, right? Like it's just screeching, and it's all over the place. And but that's what I like about it. It's so raw. Well, that's my 2 cents.
She's always done kind of the half talk, half singing thing.
Yes, she's always done that.
Which
yes,
I'm generally a fan of, and so I've always been a fan of Kim Gordon. So, yeah, okay, so I think that was probably the third time that I've listened to that song, and I'm starting to get won over, I think. I think you're getting me on this one. Yeah, Kim Gordon. So, all right, I'm going to be really bold. And go deep in the album to number 7.
Oh, okay.
Hungry Baby.
Green sky above, blue earth below, 2020.
That was a rocking one.
Yeah, that's
good
pretty
choice.
Yeah, I'm happy with my choice.
You should be.
Yeah. So Kim Gordon, she grew up in California, and then she moved to New York for indie rock stardom, and met Thurston Moore.
And she found the stardom part also.
Yeah. I can't remember
I've seen them live. I remember Sonic Youth.
You did see Sonic Youth. I think you mentioned that before. So was that? What year?
I think they had just come out with their album Ragged. I forget the name now.
So would it be in
2009, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, 2009. And Macy Hall, that's where I went
Wow. Classic place,
Macy
right?
Hall, yeah. Oh, yeah. Holy cow.
So that's, boy, that's like, Isn't that where the famous Neil Young,
Yep.
He did a video of Neil Young from Macy Hall, right?
Yep. That's the one. They're refurbishing it now. So hopefully, I mean, I really like it, but the seats are really stupid. Right? So
you mean they're like old wood seats, right?
So hopefully they'll fix everything.
Oh, that's cool. Forward.
But yeah, I've seen them live. They were really good.
So I think, this is, one of the things that makes it interesting is because, we've talked about this before. If it's right on the edge of your comprehension, sort of, it makes it really fun because it's challenging. And so the two tracks we just played, they're starting to win me over. The rest of the album still hasn't yet, but maybe we'll get there, which is cool. I mean, that just makes it cool, right?
Of course, yes.
So one more. What's it going to be?
You said you had two songs.
No. You have to pick the next one. You've listened to the whole album more thoroughly than I have, so.
All right, let's listen to the last song then. Get Your Life Back.
The end of capitalism. Winners and losers. Louis V. Lyrical waxing. Chopin off a cliff. Your breath on my eye. Toulouse. A compass of teeth. Hash away. Streets are wet. I stick my finger to plug it up. Don't lose it. The dust is settling. The detailing is sublime. My nipples are shivering.
So I just wanted to kind of give a brief idea of how, she can go from, I hesitate to say popish sound, but like pleasing sounds.
Right.
To, just drudge and just slow, melancholy mood. She just sets that tone and it's like perfect when you're speaking to your friend over a podcast and having some whiskey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's so freaking cool. Yeah, I'm going to buy her vinyl if it's not very expensive.
Sounds cool. Kim Gordon. No Kim Gordon. Home Record, it's called. So, yeah, if you like those samples, the album has plenty of opportunities to kind of challenge yourself, I think.
And oh, yeah.
That's cool. So, that's what we should expect from Kim Gordon, right?
We should. Yep.
Doesn't it make you think? It's interesting because you look at what Thurston Moore has done the past few years, you look at what Kim Gordon's been doing, and it uh-huh. makes you think about the direction that Sonic Youth is going. I really liked it a lot, actually. You said they sold out or whatever. It went mainstream. But a lot of that, Thurston Moore and...
Sorry, I didn't want to give the impression that I thought they sold out. I just said that they just went mainstream because mm-hmm. they released, I think, 6 or 7 albums on an independent label. I forget which one. And they weren't really getting anywhere. So they decided to switch. And they just exploded after that, right? The first one was Goo. In fact, I have that vinyl as well. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so crazy. And after that, I think I've loved each and every one of their albums, even their experimental albums. I just crazy about Sonic Youth. So I was really disappointed when they broke up.
Yeah, the last 3 or so, I liked a lot. But it was clearly more Thurston Moore driven,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Whereas it seems clear that Kim Gordon likes the more experimental stuff.
Yes.
So it's cool though. Both good and cool. Yeah. We got to find out what Nicholas thinks about this album.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know he's a huge Thurston Moore fan and Sonic Youth fan. I wonder what he thinks about the more experimental side with Kim Gordon.
I'm sure he loves them.
We talked about the latest Thurston Moore album that's like 2 hours long. Did you ever delve into that at all?
No.
It's I think there's a track that's an hour.
<It's> Holy. Like,
and I'm like, I took it as a challenge. Like, I need to just listen to this once. So I'm in my car and I'm like, you make it from like the 17-minute mark to the 32-minute mark on your 15-minute trip in your car, you know. It's like, oh my god, I have so far to go on this. And then I'm like, I'm not going to do that again because that was hard work getting through that whole thing. But it's not that it wasn't good, but it's just that you know, 2.5-hour album with hour-long tracks is kind of long. So,
well, when did he release this? Because the last one was, I think, 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, this one's just like a month ago. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I'm not aware of it then.
Yeah. Yeah, the last podcast with Nicholas, we talked about it kind of late in the podcast.
Oh, sure.
So.
I missed it. All right.
Anyway, yeah, check it out. It's out there. If you want to, I'd be interested to hear what you think about it. So.
Cool.
All right, we did justice, did we, to Kim Gordon?
Yes, we did.
Respect, proper reverence to the indie rock star. All right, now we're kind of building up to more and more indie rock cred and indie rock veteran status, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
We are.
There aren't too many indie rock veterans with more of kind of a reverence, right, than Nick Cave.
All right, let me set the stage a little bit.
Sure.
So I've seen this band live back in 2011 or 12. And now the band itself, they are, of course, you know, when you see them, you probably don't know they're the band. They are the band. So I was in the hall. We were, I think, about, I'm going to say about 500, 600 people. And the band came out. They were setting the stage. A few people recognized they were the band, so they were clapping and cheering, but nobody else was really paying attention. And they set up their stuff, their instruments and everything. They walked out, and then in came the main guy. And the roar that just went up, it was Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And the roar, I swear, I still remember that to this day. Like, just, you know, just the awe of this guy. And he was, I think, back then in, I'm going to guess, 61, 62.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he rocked, he could put these young guys to shame, man. And he was up there for a good 2.5-3 hours. They just took like a 5-10 minute break in between, and he just blew my mind away. And that's the day I just fell in love with Nick Cave completely. And they released an album out of the blue. I think last month, I forget now. And yeah. it's called Ghosteen. And this is the album he made basically after his son's death. I know he released an album just after his son's passing away, but that was in works before the incident happened.
Right. Yep.
This is the one in which he directly references his son.
Right.
Constantly throughout all the songs. Like the first time I heard it, holy cow. I was just choking on my tears. It was so hard to listen to. So yeah, this is another one of those albums you really can't go through without feeling a lot of emotions.
Right. Right.
Yep.
So, yeah. So again, we should probably have Barrett here because he's a long time.
Oh yeah, he's a big Nick Cave fan, right?
Nick Cave fan, right. And so, you know, I went back. Nick Cave started with a band called The Birthday Party.
Yes.
And I remember them.
Really?
I'm going to tell you this, Anurag. I am old enough to remember The Birthday Party. but here's the thing. I totally did not. They were too cutting edge and like too punk rock for me. And I just could not relate to it. And then I sampled a little bit of it today, and I'm like, yeah, I understand why I didn't really get this. So it's very interesting because, you know, what he's doing now are these tender, heartfelt songs, and it's so different from what he did before, but I have a feeling like it's sort of all in character, you know, it's very authentic. So, you know, in a way he's the same performer, but he's just in a different phase.
Yeah.
But this is okay. So I got like, 3 or 4 songs into this, and I was thinking, this might be the saddest album I've ever heard.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
It is. Just knowing the context, and there's only one comparison that I can come up with that I'm even aware of, and it's another band that's not anywhere near the, you know, the legendary status of Nick Cave, but the band Cloud Cult about. God, it's got to be like in the 90s. So, yeah, it's got to be like 20 years ago. They had a son who died at age like 1 or 2. You know, SIDS or something like that, right? And they wrote music about it that was just so sad. You know, they had 2 or 3 albums that were primarily focused on that. And you couldn't listen to him without just like, you know, like you said, you're like kind of on the verge of tears because it's so heartfelt. And we always love music that's authentic, right?
Yeah.
If it's authentic and it's that sad, it's kind of sort of hard to take, right? So now Nick Cave I think he's pulled it off with this, you know, it's, if there's any criticism I have, it's kind of long, right? And it's, it's over an hour.
And he split the albums into 2 parts, right? The first is quote-unquote short songs, and the second part is, I think, the same songs, but he's kind of dragged them on for like 10-15 minutes.
Right. Yep. Well, we should play, we've talked about it so much, we should play something, right?
Oh, but before we do that, I would urge everyone to go to a site called the redhandfiles.com. This is a site, basically he's not doing any press or media blitz or anything. He's taking questions directly from his fans and then replying to them. And they're not like one word reply. Like the first one I look at right now, somebody asked, what is shyness? And he wrote down 5 paras of what is shyness.
Wow.
It's just like, holy cow. It's the depth that he goes into replying a single question is just astounding. So I would urge everyone just to go to the redhandfiles.com and just look at what he's written. And he's also put his artwork on it. So it's really beautiful. It's really lovely. All right. Back to the album.
Yeah.
So what are we going to listen to? Goodness, there's so much. How about Bright Horses, number two?
Horses are broken free from the fields. They are horses of love, their manes full of fire. They are parting the cities, those bright burning horses. And everyone is hiding, and no one makes a sound. I'm by your side and I'm holding your hand. Bright horses of wonder springing from your burning hand. A heart and it's calling for something. And we're all so sick and tired of seeing things as they are. The horses are just horses and their manes aren't full of fire. And the fields are just fields and there ain't no Lord.
Yep. I was just reading the lyrics along with the song. Oh my goodness, it's just so captivating. It's just poetry of it all is beautiful, and then the music to go along with it, exactly what you need.
Yeah,
for the soul. Yeah, beautiful.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I think that one and number three, Waiting for You, were my two top ones. So let's go with number three.
That's it.
Waiting for You.
It's better not to say anything at all. Your body is an anchor, never asked to be free. Just wanna stay in the business of making you happy. Well, I'm just waiting for you, 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 waiting for you.
Oh man, maybe you should have played this before.
Yeah. So when I first heard the lyrics, I thought, okay, the context of his son dying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's waiting for his son to come back. But I read about it and it's not about that. It's about his wife and sort of waiting, waiting for them to sort of see things the same way in how they deal with it. You know, it's the husband wife relationship, and it's that is like kind of gut wrenching, really.
When you hear that sad
music and you know the context.
Exactly.
People have written songs that have this kind of like chord progression to make it sound like a sad song, you know, and been kind of maybe insincere, and this just strikes, you know, it just comes across as so sincere that it's just, really intense. Yeah.
You really feel bad for the guy, and then they also feel good that you can kind of share that sadness, you know, that despair that he's going through. You kind of understand what he's talking about. So, God.
Right. Well, one more, and you get the call. What's it going to be?
Oh, I'm torn between Leviathan or Sun Forest. Let's listen to Leviathan. He says, I love my baby and my baby loves me. Oh my God.
Yep.
Okay. How am I going to go to sleep now?
So that's Nick Cave, but it's called Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Yep. And so he always works with collaborators. In this album, it seems like a guy named Warren Ellis is the main collaborator.
Okay.
He's got a co-writer on some of the other songs. So I guess the Bad Seeds are Warren Ellis in this case. But when he plays live, like when you saw him live, did he have a really big band, like a whole bunch of people?
No, it was just him and three other people, I'm going to say. So Warren Ellis was one of them, yes. Mm-hmm. He is one of the band members. And I remember, I hope I'm remembering this correctly, they all had beards except for Nick Cave.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah. It was the look they were going for, I guess, at that time.
And, so what?
They were a tight band, man. They really rocked that place.
When we went down to Chicago to see Fontaine's DC, Barrett and his wife JJ told us that they had seen Nick Cave in the same venue.
Oh wow! Okay.
And it's a great venue. It's not very big. I think it has a capacity of like 500, so about the size you were saying.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I guess for indie rock cred, I need to try to see Nick Cave. I mean, Nicholas has probably had him on the barbecue circuit, so he's probably come through a few times.
He's Australian, right?
And yeah. He's from he's identified with Melbourne, but I was reading that he grew up in rural Victoria, so you know, outside of Melbourne somewhere, and then he moved to England for indie rock stardom.
Okay, is he in England right now?
I think he might have gone back to Australia, but I'm not sure.
Oh.
So another lack of music journalism. Yeah. Well, all right. So now the listeners need a palate cleanser, right? What should they listen to? Let's recommend. What should the listeners listen to? Something upbeat, right?
Oh, wow. Cult of Luna. Metal.
Some sludge metal. That'll get you out of your doldrums. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. Okay. How about some Big Thief, right? So you mentioned that you liked the Big Thief album. And
oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Two Hands. We had just to talk about it last week. So
yeah. And I was complaining, what the hell? Aren't you going to feature Big Thief? And then I downloaded the podcast and I see, oh, yeah. Okay. They already did that.
So what do you think about, did you listen to the earlier one, UFOF?
Yep. I was on the podcast with you when you featured it.
Okay. And it was so long ago. It was 6 months ago, so I didn't remember. So what do you think between those two? You got the sort of acoustic-based one and the more electric-based one.
I like the electric-based one.
It is really good. I like them both a lot. So I have a hard time deciding, but it's hard to say no to the electric guitars, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I prefer that one.
So, well, very good. Thank you for saving the podcast. And
come on.
And I'm glad that
the podcast is bigger than all of us.
I am glad that the thousand people that you spoke to at the shareholder meeting, they were, and you had to tell them that, sorry, I need to go record an international podcast, and they all probably cheered. Maybe they cheered because the meeting was over, though, not because they were impressed with the podcast. Yeah. All right. Good enough.
Thank you, man.
Very cool.
That was a lot of fun.
Got some editing to do before I'm gone all weekend. And then
where are you off to?
I'm off to Portland for Indie Rock Stardom. Well, not really. No, I'm going to visit my son in Portland. So we'll try to...
Okay.
I have not found any live shows. I mean, there are a few playing there that for various reasons I probably won't get to. So we'll see. I'll try to check out the scene, though. The Portland scene in general. It's a cool city. So I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
And then everyone, it's going to be November when this podcast goes up. So that means it's time to start thinking about your end-of-year lists. David said for the first time ever, he's kept like a running kind of list. I usually do that almost every year. Yeah. I think I do that. I just jot down, hey, this one was really good. This is a top 10 contender. And I'll have kind of a running list going. So I do have one right now of about, I don't know, 12 or 13 albums that are contenders that I don't know what order they would necessarily go in, but
guys are really prepared, huh?
And the other thing you need to do, because next year, interspersed among all of our other podcasts, I am thinking we can do people's top 10 of the decade.
Right?
And we don't need to do that all at once. I mean, maybe we'll do one with Barrett and Chris and me, but then I think everybody else, we can kind of intersperse those in the year 2020. pretty fun, right?
I see.
Isn't that exciting?
That'd be a lot of fun.
Could you do that? Like, how would you, like David said, he wouldn't even know how to start. And I said, well, I've got my top tens from every year of the last 10 years. I have them written down. So it's like, there's a good database, right?
Exactly. That's what you would do. I mean, having said that, like lots of times, what happens is that you haven't listened to an album, say, last year and listened to it this year, and you just are enthralled by it. But now you can go back and change your list, of course.
Right.
So would that go on your top 10?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to look at how did it hold up over the entire time frame. So I was saying, you know, maybe there's a number 3 or number 4 from a certain year that you will say, wait
exactly.
a minute, that was fantastic. I've got to put that in the top of the decade list. Pretty exciting. So if you totaled...
It's a fun exercise.
I think it's right? I think it's really fun. And if you... Let's see. Let's make a rough estimate. 500 podcasts, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 10 years, roughly. And that means, I bet we average 2 or more albums. We usually do 3. So you can say it's more than 1,000 albums we have featured. So, and some people will probably have in their top 10 something that wasn't on the podcast. But even if you just restricted it to that, top 10 out of 1,000 is the top 1%, right? That's pretty exciting. That's pretty cool.
I think I'm coming down around to David now. David's thoughts. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
How the hell are you going to do that?
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway.
Okay.
That's fun.
Oh, okay.
It's fun.
Good fun.
Yeah.
Maybe what you can do is to kind of narrow it down is that instead of top 10, just do the most memorable one, like just one.
How about our top 500 albums of the decade? We'll count them down. Did you ever hear that when a radio station does the top 500 songs of something when it's the like the Indy 500 weekend? They'll like count down their 500 favorite songs or whatever.
I find that ridiculous.
Yeah, it's still fun though. It's ridiculous
it
and
is,
fun.
It is fun. Like, yeah. Like Rolling Stones will come out with top 500 songs of 1970, and then a year later they come out with a similar one for 1970 again. It doesn't make sense. How can you do that? Stick to what you.
We might have talked about it when the Rockin' Apple did it. The Rockin' Apple, I think they do a top 500 songs on the, you know, that weekend in May. I guess it's Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty bad. You know, it's like Guns N' Roses and Def Leppard. And
it's the same thing over and over again.
You
got
to put
right?
Stairway to Heaven in there, and you got to put like Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun stuff.
Nothing wrong with those songs. It's just repeat. Like, just keep on repeating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks again. We should sign off.
Absolutely.
No code word this week. Just everybody just enjoy it. No pressure. Just I hope everybody enjoyed it. And I hope you've all recovered from the sad Nick Cave songs. But it's totally worthy, right?
It's totally worthy.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. You can subscribe or download the podcast wherever podcasts are available or from our website, willsband.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.